Access number 29529, Mr. Tom Austin, Rail 4. Now, once you've done your solo flight, this is on, you know, as we said, on the 15th, 19th of November, you then go back to a mixture of solo and dual flights.
Exactly.
And this is with this,
Anwiler.
Yes, I'm looking. Now, how does it, take me through the development, you start more and more acrobatics and, more complicated. Tell me, they're always interested in acrobatics, especially. Do you remember how you did some of the things like loops and stalled turn of the various barrel rolls?
Yeah, in the initial airplane, of course, the steerman, you could do aerobatics all right, but it was when you got on to 86As later on that you could
Should we save it till then?
Yeah.
Yeah, rocket. Okay.
But
what was the progression of your training there? Take me through how it went.
You did cross countries.
What were they trying to teach you in cross-country flights?
Well, could I just tell you something? First of all, the man who started this BFTS was a man named Stuart Mills. Now, Stuart Mills finished up as a group captain, but he was literally a Halton brat one time. He then asked to go on flying, and he became a sergeant pilot before the war. And then he got a commission, and he was stationed actually at Northolt for quite a time. Now, he was one of the men who was actually involved in the gladiators on the frozen lakes in Norway, if you don't know the instance. Well, when we went into Norway, they evacuated eventually because we'd lost the ground at Norway, and the whole lot, his compatriots, were evacuated from Norway on the aircraft carrier Glorious, and they got sunk. They all went. He was the only one out of that lot who'd remained. He had an accident the night before, and he came back with the King of Norway in the Devonshire, the cruiser of Devonshire. And he was very well thought of, and he was sent over to America to get these establishment of the BFTSs.
Now, were you aware of him at the time? Did you know?
Yeah,
he was there?
Yes.
What was he like?
Very nice, small man. I got pictures of him. You can see later. And he was very down to earth flyer. I mean, he maintained that a lot of the stuff that the Americans would teach you really wasn't quite that safe, as long as you kept good courses, etc., and you flew an airplane well. And unfortunately, he's dead and gone. But he gave me my actually wings test, and I found him very good on that.
Now, take me through on a cross country course, what are you looking for? I mean, what skills are you teaching you on a cross country course?
Well, first of all, bear in mind, wide open spaces, lots of desert. And if you came across a railway line, you knew darn well where it might be going. But even so, we still managed to get lost. One of the things extra was, of course, you're doing forced landings.
Cross country.
Well,
I'll come back to
Portland. Yeah, on cross country, you worked.
So how did you navigate? I mean, you'd have to use the...
Oh, yeah, just a map. Just a map. Actually.
So it wasn't so much by bearings and what you'd been told.
Well, you worked out. You had a little computer thing, you know, that you worked out your courses, taking into account the wind, etc. And then you did usually about three legs on a cross country, something like that, and possibly you might land at one place. But
now, obviously, one thing that could happen on a cross country is a forced landing. So,
well, that was it.
Or you might practice. Tell us about that.
Well, you always had to keep a lookout for a likely place that you could get down, a reasonable flat place, etc. And instruct you on this, when you were flying with an instructor, you will probably, he might suddenly cut your engine and say, forced landing. And then you would have to take him through and say which field you're trying to get in or which particular place, taking into account the wind direction and the surface, etc. that was essential because, I mean, you can't find an airfield anywhere, just saying that.
Would you actually carry out the forward landing? You'd actually do it, or would you just...
We have a reserved landing field, yes, where you did a landing.
Now, what else, what are the developments in your training were you doing with the steerman?
Yeah, with the steerman. Well, you did a bit of formation flying.
Now, tell me about that. What are the skills of formation flying? Is it easy? Is it as hard as it looks? Is it as easy as
no,
people
it,
say?
To me, I say it's hard because you've got, particularly over there, you've got the unstable air with heat coming up from the ground. So it's a question of not overdoing things. In other words, not advancing your throttle too much and passing the chap. And keeping at a reasonable distance.
Is the throttle the key thing?
Oh, yes. Yeah, definitely.
And how close would you go at this early stage in the steering?
Not too close.
So what are we talking?
A wingspan away?
To an outsider like us, that would seem very close.
Yeah, well, no, I mean, very close. He's really getting in, tucked in with him, you know.
Now, what about instrument flying?
Yes, we had a link trainer there. Which,
tell me about the link.
Well, I enjoyed link training because, and it put me in good stead later on. Because
can
most
you explain
of
explain what it was? Because
it's
a simulator, but it's not a computer one like they
no,
have.
No.
What is it?
Well, it's like a little box, blue, mounted on a plinth, and it would react to your movements. Not violently, yeah, the controls, you see. And you were put in that and you were given certain exercises. It might be almost a simulated cross-country or something like that. But the more you practiced on link trainer, the better you are for flying, definitely. Because quite honestly, particularly night flying, you know, when you have got to rely on instruments. And fortunately, I enjoyed that sort of...
So it was realistic?
It was realistic. There was a crab thing on a table which marked out your movements.
So you could see where you'd gone wrong?
Yeah, exactly.
Now, what was instrument flying in a cockpit? Would they have a hood on you?
Yeah, you take a hood and... Just fly on the basic instruments. You'd be told what to do. Sometimes what would happen is that you might he'd put you in a unusual position. He'd take control of the airplane, and of course, when you can't see the outside, you get all sorts of imagination of what situation, position the airplane's in, so that he would say, "Now straighten the airplane out." You see. And you went through normal procedure, watched your instruments. It's practice makes perfect.
What about night flying, which is the sort of same thing?
Well, yeah, the same thing. Night flying, over there, of course, in the States, at night time, generally speaking, you could see an horizon. I enjoyed night flying, as a matter of fact. We did have a runway there, etc., but you had glide path indicators for landing, for instance. But we did have two chaps on our course disorientated one night, went in, and they were never quite sure what actually happened, but obviously... two of them were flying together. One would be a safety pilot while the other would be doing the flying. And it's so easy to get disorientated, really. I mean, the Americans believe in flying by the seat of your pants, as they call it, which you don't let the airplane fly you. You fly the airplane. And...
So what happened? Was there a crash?
Yes. Yeah, we lost As a matter of fact, out of the whole period that the training took place over there, we got something like 26 graves.
Out of how many?
Out of, well, no, a few hundred went through all told. Quite a lot.
But that's still quite a high percentage.
It's still quite a high, yeah. Yeah.
Did the casualties upset you? I mean, were you aware of them at the time?
No, you were aware of them. I don't think they really upset you.
Was anyone you knew killed?
Oh, yes, yes. These two chaps themselves, we knew them very well, you know. But I don't think it affected you principally. Possibly made you a bit more careful on certain things flying.
Now, you started to do the odd loops yeah. and side slips. Yeah. We'll come to aerobatics yeah. when you get the better yeah. aircraft. But, I mean, and there's an Immelmann and a slow roll yeah. starting to appear. You know, you started to get these things. Did you feel you were making progress? You know, this is moving into December, so you've been doing it a month or so now.
Oh, yes, definitely.
So what's the next stage of your flying then? Is it this test you had? I haven't found that yet, but...
At the end of the steerman flying, we had leave for a few days. And then we had this intermediate aircraft called a Volte BT-13, which was a fixed-wing, low-wing monoplane, but underpowered.
Now, you got that in January.
Yeah.
Now, before we go into that, that's the right time to bring it up. But did you have your flying test with Mills before?
Oh, no. So I was talking about the flying test at the end on the wings.
Right, at the very end, yeah. Right. Now, what this aircraft, I really don't know what this is at all. So what was it? It's a BT...
13. Volte BT-13.
Volte being spelt...
V-U-L-T-E-E.
Right. Now, what can you tell us a bit about what this aircraft was like?
I'll show you a picture of it.
No, because I can't see.
Sorry, I beg your pardon. It's a low-wing monoplane, but it was underpowered.
So what did that mean?
You were going from a biplane to a monoplane, slightly more advanced. It didn't have a retractable undercarriage on it. It was fixed undercarriage. And it helped you to get onto, because when you got onto an AT-6A, which is a much more advanced aeroplane, it filled in the gap between.
And how did you find flying the, well, call it the BT-13, how did you find it?
Very good. I had a good instructor on it.
You had to learn how to evacuate it, I see.
Yes.
Abandon it. I mean, was there any, what's the procedure on abandoning it? Do they mean bailing out?
Well, you put the hood back and out you go. Well, you usually possibly, depending what attitude the airplane was in for start, you know. You normally flew in the front on that, and the instructor be at the back.
So why was the note that there wasn't any of this bailing out, abandoning the aircraft training with the steerman? This is a separate thing, is it?
Yes, it's the fact that you were closed in, you see. You got a hood that came
you
over.
You practiced this on the ground, obviously not
well,
in the air.
Yes.
Now, what? How did your training progress then? This is on the second bit.
Yeah.
You started to do... Do you want to talk about aerobatics now? You're starting to do more.
Yes, more aerobatics.
Well, tell me, what are the aerobatics you know? If we go through some of the things it's made... Well, a loop. What's a loop? How do you do a loop?
You get up speed, you dive, and then pull it up gradually, and you keep the speed so you don't stall, and just go straight away over the top, keeping it... in the right level.
Now, is that reasonably easy, but the point is to be accurate?
You've got to be accurate, that's
right. So you don't come out to the right?
That's right, you don't come out to the right or the left. You
actually
don't. Yeah, or fall out, exactly.
And it's more difficult, I presume, to be accurate than it is...
Oh, yes, yeah.
And did you have any problem with the loops, with a G or anything
like
that?
No,
Or G's, a later expression.
Yeah.
Now, what about things like the various rolls, the slow roll,
slow roll, yeah, well... We used to practice slow rolls, which, again, is turning that you don't lose height as you do the roll. Otherwise, it turns into a barrel roll.
Now, what is a slurrer? Or what is a barrel roll?
Well, you're going perfectly around 360 degrees.
Whilst going straight ahead. Whilst
going straight ahead.
Now, how do you do that? What do you do with your controls to do that?
As far as I remember, because I mean, I haven't done aerobatics for a long time. You've got at speed and you put the stick over into the corner there, you see. And
it just does it then?
Yeah, well, and it just... I mean, modern aircraft, so you can flick roll things, etc. But
So again, rolls. What about some of the other roll? Barrel roll was.
Well, barrel roll is an extended slow roll. In other words, you're not doing the small turn; you're doing a large turn. You're more or less rolling out into a bigger turn.
And Immelmann roll.
Immelmann is where you went into a loop and you rolled over at the top.
Now, what side slips?
Side slips. Well, you can do that. For instance, when you're landing, you see to cut your height off.
What exactly
slip
does
down.
It mean? Because people.
Well, you're putting the airplane in a position that instead of coming straight forward, you're slipping, losing height, and to get onto the end of the runway, so you don't go too far up. It's a means of losing height.
No problem. Any aerobatics you particularly remember?
Not really. I remember being taken up later when we were able to do fill some hours in night flying, and the instructor saying to me, what a peculiar question, have you ever done night aerobatics? Well, obviously I hadn't. And... he did a whole system of aerobatics at night. I mean, he was an absolutely marvellous flyer. And gives you confidence in the fact that you can do such things, you know.
Is that the real value of it?
Well, I think the real value of aerobatics is that you can retrieve the aeroplane from any sort of attitude you might find yourself
you do
in.
Spend much of January and February doing this.
Yeah.
I mean,
oh, yes.
I'm looking at your log.
Yeah, that's
again,
right.
Again,
yeah.
And
yeah.
That's right. You spend an awful lot of time doing this stuff, you know.
Yeah.
As well as some night landings and takeoffs and things. Now, what about your... let's break off for a bit, because you've had your first leave. You had your leave in between the what would you do on your leaves, your local leaves?
Well, obviously, we were 400 miles from Hollywood. And our main effort was go and see the bright lights in Hollywood. And
well, tell us about that, because that's where that picture in the book came
from. Well, I tell you, the first
story.
There were 50 of us on leave for about 5 days, and we know it's 400 miles, so we're going to hitchhike there because we didn't have the money to go otherwise. And I always remember we actually got as far as about 70 odd miles up the road. We started late morning, and we got there late afternoon, and we stopped at this cafe there, you see. And the traffic seemed to die off. And strangely enough, out of the 50 of us, there must have been about at least 25 of us all congregated in this cafe. And the cafe owner said, don't worry, when the night stuff comes through, I'll fix you up with some lifts, you see. Well, we're sitting there, and eventually when it gets dark, a chap came in and he said to him, have you got any room in your vehicle? And he said, yes. And he had. The firm exists today, Beacons. And it was a big truck with a trailer. And he had nothing but settees, beds, all in this, you see. And he said, I'll take as many as you like. So he took them in the back, put them in, and he said, would somebody like to come up front with me? Being dead keen, I said, yes. And I went and sat up with him. Now, at that time, there was no speed limit on the American roads. And it was, if you've ever seen a thing on the television over here some years back called Cannonball, which was to do with driving trucks, it was amazing, you know, and a number of gears, he's forward gears, he's got reverse gears. But we really went through the night, and he took us to Los Angeles and dropped us off at the YMCA to clean up.
And that's where you were staying, the YMCA?
No, we weren't staying there. No, no, no. As a matter of fact, what happened, we go in to YMCA, and then we were told by the previous course members, you want to go to the British War Relief Society, you see. Again, connected with the film industry. And we found some youngsters who gave us a lift to this place, and we met these people, and they were mostly people who cleared out of this country, quite honestly, when war was imminent. They had money. And I mean, I know they gave us tea and said, "Where do you come from?" We told them. And they said, "Well, what do you want to do?" So I said, "Well, we want to stay and see as much as Los Angeles and Hollywood as we can." "Well, if you come back," they said, "at about 6 o'clock this evening, we'll take you to one of our meetings at the Coconut Grove, where it's Bundles for Britain thing." When they took us there and we got introduced to people, and people came up to you and said, "Would you like to stay with us?" And we stayed with a family, or not a family, a husband and wife. She was a proofreader. He was a retired baker, both English. And although they didn't have a car, friends had a car, they didn't actually operate a car, he made it his duty to make sure that we got on and saw as much as possible. He took us, first of all, he was quite well known, down to the city hall, where we met the chief of police, because one of the chaps we had was an ex-policeman. And we said, "Would you like to go to the police college like it is at Hendon?" So we went there. And I should never forget that, because they showed us all round the establishment. And then about 2 o'clock in the afternoon, a lieutenant came up and said, "I'm Lieutenant so-and-so, and I'm in charge of you boys for the rest of the day." There were three of us together. Get in a police car. He said, "Where do you want to go?" And we had, for the rest of the day up to midnight, this police car to take us round. They went out of their way to do these things, you know. And, of course, by this time, they were in the war. When they came in, we were over there when, you know, Pearl
Harbor. They come in December. I'll go back to that, because I should have asked you about that.
Yeah, they came in December.
This is January, I think.
This is January, that's right.
Now, so where did they take you during
this? Well, I mean, anywhere you like. We went to looked at all various places of interest, and we finished up at Old Carroll's.
Now, that's where the picture of you,
that's
the
where
rather
the picture
attractive
was.
Woman is.
That's right.
Now, tell me about Earl Carroll's.
Yeah.
Is it spelled as it sounds?
I think it's C-A-R-R-O-L-L. I'm not sure. But it was a big night restaurant where you had two shows in the evening. There was one at 9 o'clock, this cabaret, and there was always and then one at midnight or something. It was always a big band playing there. Now, as I say, when we went first into the Hollywood area, we were walking around looking at things, and we stopped outside a shop that sold bicycles. And it turned out to be a French ex-racing cyclist who lent us bikes to go around, so we used those. But a policeman came up to us and introduced himself as being from Northern Ireland, asked us what we were doing, and we told him. We were in uniform, you see. And he said, "Well, take my advice. You go not in the back door. You go in the front door and tell them where you come from. That's how I got my job," he said. You know? And it was literally true. I mean, we went into Old Carroll's. We said who we were. We didn't pay to go in. They gave us a table. We got invited by somebody in there to join them. And the evening was marvellous.
What was it like? I mean, in the picture, it's a nightclub.
It's a big restaurant place.
Oh, it's not a
no, with a stage. Well, at least on the ground. And you have this cabaret show put on, literally. And there was another place called the Florentine Gardens.
Now, how
same.
Come you got photographed? Because you seem to be being into it's well, quite a dramatic photograph for
I
a young lad.
They took these photographs. I think some Canadians asked us to join them, and we joined them. And I should imagine they paid for the photograph. Well, we never really found out. I mean, I remember on the Florentine Gardens of they wanted somebody to stand on their head in the middle of the floor, which I did, and I got a bottle of wine for this, you know, that sort of thing. We really thoroughly enjoyed it. There were no two ways about it. And now, for instance, they were selling war bonds in Pershing Square, which is equivalent to Trafalgar Square. And when they saw us in the crowd in uniform, they pulled us up on the stage and literally sold us off for people donating so much money to war bonds. And I remember the we had a French woman bought us off and then took us all round the town afterwards, as long as we like, until we said where we wanted to go, anything at all. And I mean, when we were on these bikes, by the way, going round Beverly Hills, marvellous houses, and this is in the afternoon, and we saw a car, a nice open touring car with some about four girls in it, and they passed us and stopped us and said, what were we doing? We told them we were on leave, you see. And they said, would you like a swim? We followed them, and they took us to a house with a marvellous swimming pool, and we didn't have any costumes, but they said, no problem. You go in the changing rooms there, and you can take what you like on costumes. Now, we had a marvellous afternoon where they provided tea and everything like that. To this day, I don't know whose house it was. It was obviously some film star of some credit. I mean, at that time, you see, the people who were prominent, Bing Crosby. And as a matter of fact, one of the things we used to do on the first leave was the chap we were staying with used to ring up the studios. There would be known television, but they had like a theatre where they put these shows on, like Kraft Cheese Show, which was run by Bing Crosby, etc. And when, now they were in the war, you saw the show, they sent the tickets up to you, you went down and saw the show in the town, and then afterwards they put an impromptu thing on the stage, invited you up, and they gave you some drinks, and they also gave you music. I remember in one case I had a dance with Lucille Ball, who was 6 foot tall, incidentally. And you met these people out of the film industry.
Did you meet any of the British or Australia? Yes. Errol Flynn was Australian.
Who were the British ones? It was Basil Rathbone. That was one we met.
And were they nice, friendly?
Oh, we were very friendly. I mean, as usual, they started these, what do they call them, canteens that they ran. The film people themselves used to go there and do the necessary serving, etc., you know. But we had so much interest to go and see various places with these people, that well, the time just disappeared, literally.
You had a good time.
Oh, absolutely.
And that was a week, was it? Or
about 5 days, yeah.
And that was in between courses?
In between courses.
Now, so what in the second part of the course, we'll go back onto that.
Yeah.
Anything else happening? I mean, you seem to be there into February, just doing more and more of this this stuff. And still on the same aircraft. Any incidents you remember, or any close? I mean,
no.
You can have close shaves yourself as well.
I can honestly say I can't remember. Fortunately, I wasn't. I think we were on leave at the time. They did have a dust storm once, where that caused quite a bit of panic with the it's thunder and lightning and a dust screen coming off the desert. You know.
But you weren't there.
No, so didn't have to bother on that.
Now, so then you change aircraft, I think, to the
T6A. Now,
that's in March.
Yeah.
What's
a Harvard, in effect. We call it a Harvard.
So, it's made by Harvard, is it?
No, I mean, that's the name Harvard, right. Like Wellington, you know.
Right, sorry, I'm
no,
a it's, terrible
but
trainer.
In actual fact, it's AT6A, you see.
Now, what did you think of the ATC?
Well, no, you had to go and know the cockpit, where the instruments were, etc., and all the controls, blindfold. You had to practice it before you used it, because it was quite an advanced aeroplane as far as we were concerned. I mean,
what was it like? Did you describe it as an aircraft?
Well, it was initially almost like a fighter aircraft, really. I mean, we were never used to guns over there while we were there at all. It was quite a powerful airplane, and of course, the thing about the Harvard is this: the noise the air screw makes, you know. But you literally, as I say, you had to do a blindfold test and pass out on that before they let you loose in it at all.